prices have increased over 40%. Energy prices have increased over 20%. Wheat and gas prices have increased over 70%. What's going to be next? Do you see these trends reversing or even stabilizing? All fiat currencies have always failed and collapsed their economies on their way down. The Roman Empire, China, France, Argentina, Finland, Mexico, Russia, and Zimbabwe all tried fiat currency and all collapsed into chaos. Meanwhile, the dollar has lost over 97% of its gold value since 1971, when an ounce of gold was valued at $35. If your assets are in paper, you are in danger. Protect your assets with gold and silver. Visit Discount Gold and Silver Trading at DGScoins.com. That's DGScoins.com or call 1-800-375-4188. That's 800-375-4188. Protect yourself and your family.
Good afternoon, ladies and gentlemen. I'm Melody Cederstrom, and you're listening to Financial Survival. I'm here with my co-host, Alfred Adisk, to bring you our opinion and commentary on today's economic and political events for Thursday, October 16th, 2014. Good afternoon, Al.
Hello, Melody.
We're going to be here the whole hour today. We'll be back with James Corbett next week, but for now, it's you and me. For the full hour.
Okay.
All righty.
I'm not afraid if you're not.
It was a crazy day in the markets today. You know, when it opened early on this morning, the Dow plummeted about 200 points and it tumbled below the 16,000 level. And then it started to rebound quite dramatically. And now we're looking at the Dow Jones being... last time I saw it was to the upside. I'll bring those numbers up here shortly. And we can talk about why and the concerns that hit the stock markets today. Gold, we saw the same type of trading today, just about a 10-point trading range. And right now we're currently looking at gold at 1241, down 80. Silver is down 4. At 1750, platinum is down $12 at 1252, and palladium took another beating today of all the precious metals, down almost 3% at $745. The USDX today is trading stronger, but it's still below 85. At 84.98. Crude oil was sort of all over the page too today, but it is up almost a dollar at 82.73. And the paper markets today, let's get the final readings on those. And the Dow, 25 points. To the Dow, down. 16,116. The NASDAQ managed to be up 2 points at 42.17. And the S&P was up a quarter of a point, woohoo, at 18.62. And we saw some movement in the 10-year yield today, up 0.06 at 2.15. And I do believe that dipped below the 2 again or in early morning trading. So, a lot of volatility in the markets today. And, again, the same concerns as we had yesterday when you had the Dow drop 460 points and it came all the way back to being down only 173 points. You had the NASDAQ yesterday break through its level of 41.38 early in trading, but now it's above that. And again, you can look at the concerns. You're looking at global growth and, of course, the European countries, particularly Greece and Spain, but then again, Germany, they've had some their numbers are they're about ready to enter into a recession. Today, they're looking at Greece and Spain. Yesterday, it was Germany, but you can look at the whole European countries as having significant problems. And them, just like the U.S., never came out of the initial problems that they had, just like the United States. It was all covered up, easy money, and you had Draghi come out not too long ago saying they were ready to do quantitative easing. They were going to throw a lot of the stimulus at their markets to see what was going to happen. And of course, so far we hasn't produced anything at all. The Federal Reserve, Yellen, came out today. And you know, it's really no surprise. Every meeting, every news announcement out of the Federal Reserve, they stand there and they say that they will continue to accommodate to the necessity of the markets.
Yep.
So she comes out today, and supposedly that made the markets turn around. And but I mean, it's not new news. I mean, we know they're going to do that. So you know, perhaps people just feel comforted to hear it once again. So
no, it's just evidence that the only thing that's really holding the market up is artificial stimulus provided by the Federal Reserve. Everybody knows this who looks at this. The people that are saying, oh, I'm so relieved, the Federal Reserve is going to prop up the markets. Everyone who understands that's true also understands that the markets are overvalued. And the only reason they have these numbers is because, you know, artificial support.
So now we'll have to see if they actually finish or complete or delay the end to the quantitative easing, the bond buying experiment that they've been doing so well over the past year or so, 2 years. And we'll wait and see what happens. And the markets are not looking good. The UK, the FTSE 100, that tumbled nearly 3% today. Yeah. Last night for us, and markets elsewhere, they also fell. Greece's stock and bond markets, they've been in a free fall with the worry about the country's efforts to leave its bailout program. And you have those same worries spreading to Spain. You've had the oil in free fall kind of balanced out today. And we'll have to see. But I guess if anybody wanted to look at good news, if you actually believe these numbers, claims for first-time unemployment benefits tumbled last week to the lowest level since 2000. I don't have the exact number. It's just that the first-time unemployment benefits dropped. So I don't know why I didn't have the numbers here, but I don't.
The dog ate your homework, didn't it?
Doggy, little Ruby.
Uh-huh.
Sometimes.
You know, John Williams made a point in one of his recent interviews. As a matter of fact, he was on Greg Hunter. Greg Hunter interviewed him, who's been on this program a time or two. But Williams made the point that we're not going to see a recovery until we flush the waste and the fat out of the economy. What he means by that is that when you go up, you have one of these booms. All right, taking us up to 2007 and thereabouts, and we've got a kind of boom going on. It's artificial. It's a bubble. It's based in large measure on a bunch of crapola. Right? And what Williams is arguing is that we won't have an economic recovery until we flush all of that crapola out of the economy. That means we've got to observe, we've got to endure a certain amount of pain. It can't just be papered over. It's like having an intestinal disease. You've got to clean yourself out either by vomiting or defecating in order to get the poisons out of your system so you can begin to recover. But what we're doing with quantitative easing and the rest of these stimulus programs, We're essentially plugging people up where they can't get rid of the poison that's in their gut. And all that does is guarantee they're going to stay sick. So William's implication is we've got to take our medicine. All right? It's only going to get worse the longer we wait, and it's not going to kill us. But we are going to have to take that before we see a real recovery. And you know, time is tending to prove what William said is correct. We're just stagnating here. They've prevented the symptoms, but they haven't controlled the problem.
Yeah, but the problem is what can't be and won't be addressed.
Well,
and that's
it's going
deal.
To be addressed though sooner or later. And the real implication is they may not want to address the problem, but they're going to have to address the problem, or we are going to stay in this stagnant condition from now until heck freezes over.
Oh,
that's the implication. We aren't going to get better, and eventually we might even get substantially worse. But we won't get better until we say, "All right, fine." You know, we got to do what we got to do. We got an economic hangover here. Let's deal with it and be done with it and go through a bad day rather than just taking a hair of the dog every day to make sure we don't really suffer a hangover.
They can't address the economic problems that we have. Gravity is what's going to force them into doing it. And you're right. They're going to just continue to feed the beast. Until there's nothing else to feed, and
that's where we're going on this.
I mean, that's where we're at.
Until they run out of the ability to artificially, we won't see a recovery, or at least this is the implication of William's comments, and I'm inclined to agree with them. We aren't going to see a recovery, even though they're stimulating. They can only kind of keep us in a stagnant position. We won't see the recovery until first we flush the irrational investments out.
And that's the collapse. And that's the collapse. Our recovery is just not being in the collapse. It's just stemming the bleeding for a little bit. But they can't go back in an issue because we've got, as you say, Al, there's just too much debt. There isn't anything they can do.
Yeah, I know.
And so, I mean, yes, he is right. It has to be flushed. But what suggestions does he give for flushing?
Well, I don't know. Take some Epsom salts or something. We need to take Epsom salts.
Well, I mean, the point is, I mean, what they need to do, they can't do or won't do.
Well, what they need to do and what they're going to be forced to do sooner or later is tell the truth to the American people and say, look, we have screwed up big time. We have mismanaged the economy. We've put us in a terrible position, and we're going to have to take our medicine. And I know no politician alive wants to be the guy to deliver that message. But somebody's going to deliver that message in my lifetime. All right? They're going to have to stand up and say, uh-oh, we really messed up. And now we're all going to have to pay for it. But we'll get through it. The vast majority of us will survive. And when we get through, blah, blah, blah. And then we go back and we get into, you know, Not just a recovery mode, but a mode where we begin to prosper again.
Well, you're certainly more optimistic than I am.
Well, I don't know what the truth of the matter is, but I don't think, you know, like I've said a bunch of times, the worst case scenario is the one we tend to focus on, but the worst case is always the least likely case.
Mm-hmm. True.
So it's the worst case, whatever it is, 100% of the worst case, almost certainly not going to happen. Could happen, but not likely. I mean, we might get 60% of the worst case. We might get 80% of the worst case. We aren't going to get 100% of the worst case unless we are singularly cursed. So I'm not looking for a worst case scenario, but I am saying you got to prepare for that possibility.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
Here's one of the things that interested me. Here's one of the little articles coming out of Deal Book, which is from the New York Times. And the headline is Steep Sell-Off Spreads Fear to Wall Street. And they point out, dizzied by the turmoil, Wall Street experts agreed on one thing. the jarring day, this was Tuesday, showed that fear had finally returned to the market that had become disconcertingly complacent. We had reports from the fear index that there was no fear, and that was just 10 days ago.
Mm-hmm.
All right? They were just, everybody was complacent. What's going on? Nothing's happening here. Then just move along, folks. Go about your business. There's nothing going on. And this is important because it indicates, and it was one of the most complacent ratings they'd ever had on the fear index. Well, this is parallel to that idea that we stress on the program, you buy low and you sell high. And one of the signals of when do you buy low is when everybody says, that's a stupid investment. When everybody says, no, that's crazy, don't invest in that, that's probably the time to buy. Now, I know there's some things that really are crazy. You have to use some, you know, you have to discern whether this is a crazy investment or is it really an investment that makes a lot of sense, a lot of fundamentals behind it, but not making good sense. When everybody says this is crazy, that's time to at least look it over and say, you know, maybe now's the time to buy, because when they all say it's crazy, that's when the price will be at or near its low point. Similarly, when everybody says everything's cool, everything's copacetic, and nothing could possibly go wrong, guess what? Something's going to happen. It becomes a signal. That's the sell high signal. And we see evidence of that in this report, again, that the, you know, the fear index been just in, the fear level was almost astonishingly low. Just what, a week or 10 days ago? And it's not now.
The VIX, the VIX, the gauge of the market volatility, that spiked 90% over just the past month alone. And you're beginning to see these wild market swings. They're becoming, you know, something that, you know, and people will eventually get used to them too. And, but it was, and again, it was, you know, it went from extreme greed on CNN's Money, Fear, and Greed Index. It went from extreme greed to extreme fear. In just a month or so ago. So, yeah, the tide changes very quickly.
I understand. And it's, but my point is, when everybody really agrees on something, the strong probability is that everybody's wrong. When it comes to the economy, when it comes to the markets, when everybody says this is the way to go, that's almost certainly not the way to go.
Well, here's some good news for those folks in Texas, Al, including yourself. Retail gasoline prices, that dropped, slipped below $3 per gallon. That was reported today. It settled at 2.99 per gallon, and that's down a whole dime in the last week. And nationwide gasoline prices fell 9 cents to reach 3.16 per gallon. AAA officials say low demand combined with abundant supply, low demand and abundant supply, has kept the downward pressure on global oil prices. It's probably a little bit more than that, but yeah.
Still at $2.99. Good news for Dallas.
More good news for Dallas. So maybe, maybe there's...
First nurse to contract Ebola is headed for a suburb of Washington, D.C. They've moved her. She's going to the National Institute of Health at Bethesda, Maryland, a suburb of Washington, D.C. All right? And seeing as I live down here in Dallas, I'm pleased that the government has just reduced the number of Dallas Ebola patients by 50%. Well, we have two of them, and they've shipped one to Washington. And so I feel safer already here in Dallas. And I'm hoping they relocate Ms. Pham. That's the first nurse to contract Ebola here in the United States, Dallas. I hope they maybe they'll relocate her to the White House.
One is
President Obama can demonstrate how little there is for all of us to fear from Ebola. Maybe they can even get the first lady to empty the bedpans. What do you think?
Well, they did transfer the other nurse down to Atlanta. So both of the nurses is out of Dallas.
Well, then I feel even better.
Do you feel even better?
Yeah, I may go out to a theater and party tonight and meet a bunch of strangers.
What was really interesting, I was watching a video of they were loading up the one that they were taking to Atlanta. And they showed this video putting her into the ambulance and then loading her into the plane. And there was one guy, there was like these, you know, she was in a hazmat suit. There was these other three men or people in a hazmat suit. And then there was this one guy in a suit that was just walking all around and in and around these guys. And he had no protection whatsoever. In fact, he even touched the bags. They were. So I'm just thinking to myself, I wonder if that's even the woman. It looked more like it was, you know, some sort of a theater that they knew
sort
they
of
were
a
being
Muslim thing. It may be a new form of the burqa.
No, I don't think so. But yeah, I mean, he didn't have any coverings, no gloves, no anything, and you know, he was just walking around these other people in hazmat suits and handling the bag and so forth, and it was just like, well, and it doesn't seem like anybody knew who this person was, whether he was from the CDC or whatever. So.
Strange. Probably a good way to catch a free ride on an airplane. Just show up in a hazmat suit. They give you a ride to wherever you want to go. I'm Alfred Addis here with Melody Cederstrom on Financial Survival. We'll be back in a moment. Please stay tuned.
Pandemics will be a part of our future. The question is, how do we protect ourselves? Are you willing to put your trust in untested vaccine, hoping it kills mutating viruses? Remember, in 1976, health officials tried to inoculate Americans with swine flu, and there was a 300% death rate for those inoculated, and millions were paid out in damages. God gave you a sophisticated immune system, and in times of need, you can make it 10 times stronger. So there's no need to panic. Just get prepared. Call Apothecary Herbs to order your upgraded pandemic kit. You will have 8 professional strength formulas offering broad-spectrum immune-boosting protection. Take a stand. Have a plan. Have peace and request your pandemic kit today. Call Apothecary Herbs toll-free, 866-229-3663, or online, thepowerherbs.com. That's 866-229-3663, or thepowerherbs.com.
Food prices have increased over 40%. Energy prices have increased over 20%. Wheat and gas prices have increased over 70%. What's going to be next? Do you see these trends reversing or even stabilizing? All fiat currencies have always failed and collapsed their economies on their way down. The Roman Empire, China, France, Argentina, Finland, Mexico, Russia, and Zimbabwe all tried fiat currency and all collapsed into chaos. Meanwhile, the dollar has lost over 97% of its gold value since 1971, when an ounce of gold was valued at $35. If your assets are in paper, you are in danger. Protect your assets with gold and silver. Visit Discount Gold and Silver Trading at DGScoins.com. That's DGScoins.com, or call 1-800-375-4188. That's 800-375-4188. Protect yourself and your family.
Are you concerned about prescription drug dependency to stay healthy? Are you worried that the cost and availability of your medications may put your health at risk? Perhaps it's time you consider a natural, safe, and effective way to deal with your health problems. If only you knew where to start. Start right here. Tune in to Herb Talk Live with herbalist Wendy Wilson every Tuesday and Thursday evening, 7 p.m. on AmericanVoiceRadio.com, where your healthcare options just became endless.
Hi, folks. I'm Alfred Addis here on Financial Survival with co-host Melody Cederstrom. Program is brought to you by Discount Gold and Silver, 1-800-375-4188 for all your gold and silver coin needs. What's next, Melody?
Mint State 61 $10 Liberty gold pieces. I was reviewing their prices today, and they're selling at the same price as my Mint State 61 $20 Liberty gold pieces. So anytime you have the smaller pieces that sell at the same price as the larger pieces, it's a good time to pick some up.
Pick which ones, the smaller ones or the bigger ones?
Yeah, the smaller you go in the size of your coins, you always pay more. So when you can get the smaller pieces for the same price as the $20 gold pieces, it's time to pick up those small ones.
And what you mean is the same price per ounce.
Correct.
Yeah.
Correct. So it's a great time to be buying those Mint State 61 $10 Liberties. They can call us at 1-800-375-4188. That's 1-800-375-4188 for $725. And the spread, when gold was increasing, there was a huge spread between the 10s and the 20s. So, again, same level or below is the time you buy the Mint State 61 $10 Liberty gold pieces. Give us a call at 1-800-375-4188. That's 1-800-375-4188. Visit our website at dgscoins.com. dgscoins.com. And I guess we got Jim from West Virginia, Al, on the telephone.
Okay, Jim, what you got for us?
Let me roll on this one. Okay, John Williams didn't have to come up with a solution. Nobody has to. It's an auto-flush mode. The wealth-manipulating non-productive, as opposed to wealth-producing, the wealth-manipulators, non-productive, garbage, useless trash, are self-destructing. Mm-hmm. Number one on this list of the non-productive are the too-big-to-fail banks. How will they operate without Federal Reserve notes? Secondary, we have insurance. They'll go broke without Federal Reserve notes. They're gone. How about second on the list? Governments, how will they operate without Federal Reserve notes? They have nothing to barter, folks. And not only that, but the next on the list is Social Security and welfare. They're going to be in deep doo-doo. But now the wealth producers.
Pension plans.
Huh?
Pension plans.
Thank you. Now the wealth producers, if they're in paper, they're dead meats if they haven't already been robbed. Now, the wealth producers will come out of this, and they will have something to barter. Now, if you have wealth right now, you won't have anything to barter after the FRN goes, and this has happened twice in our history. The Continental and the Confederate, okay, they're gone. But if you have wealth now, the only way you're going to hang on to it is put something tangible. Now, dang it, get the metals while you can, because when the price shoots up, I guarantee you, stocks are going to vaporize. And I think I've said enough. I try to simplify things for you brainy types, okay? Catch you later.
Thank you, Jim. That was Jim from West Virginia. What's next, Molly?
We were just on the gasoline prices, and there have been 52 million cars and truck recalls in the U.S. so far this year. So it's just another sign that the quality of vehicles and any items being produced continue to decline. You'll see arguments that the only reason there's so many of these recalls is because cars are they're so much more complicated with all the computers, because everybody wants all this fancy stuff and so forth. But yet the parts that they're recalling, really don't, I don't think alternators have a lot to do with, or mirrors have a lot to do with, you know, computers and so forth. They might, but. So I just found that interesting. You know, we talk about leaves in the breeze, and it's just one of those signs that
quality is not improving, at least not for the moment. And it's going to have to. I mean, it's going to put these automobile manufacturers under considerable stress. And it may be not so much that quality is failing, but it may be that the regulatory environment is becoming more strict and stringent, and they have learned that, oh my gosh, if somebody forgets to fasten a hairpin at some point in a new Cadillac, they better get the Cadillac, bring back 100,000 Cadillacs and put a new hairpin in there. Some of this is a little bit of a reaction to fears of litigation. Those fears might be exaggerated, but it certainly indicates an additional cost that's going to be imposed on these automobile dealers. One of the implications of this is that when they find a model, an automobile of a particular model, and they get that thing running properly, they might not change it every year to try to increase its, you know, its sexiness for the American people. It's, ooh, they got a bigger tail fin on it, or ooh, they got a smaller tail fin. Let's buy it. Let's buy it. You won't be able to change things as often without risking those changes resulting in callbacks. You get it fine-tuned, maybe you keep it for a while. So maybe we'll see less, maybe this increased callbacks, maybe it points to a time where we see less new models, less new risk, and instead we will be purchasing automobiles based on those that have been proven over a number of years to be reliable and without problems. Got another one here from, this is an article from the, this is just silliness, but it's from the Washington Times. And the headline is, Army looking for recruits who thrive in conditions of chaos. At one time, the Army was looking for men and women who could become Army strong. It's now specifically looking for soldiers who thrive in conditions of chaos. We've got Lieutenant General Robert Brown, commander of the Army Combined Arms Center, said, we used to say we needed individuals who are comfortable in conditions of ambiguity. I don't know when they said that, Melody, but it wasn't when I was in the military. Nobody said anything about ambiguity. You need to learn to be, as a good soldier, you need to be comfortable with ambiguity. I didn't hear that when I was there, but now, or at least recently, they had to be comfortable with ambiguity. Now, we need people who improve and thrive in conditions of chaos. There's a big difference between comfortable and thriving. So if you want to get into the Army, apparently you've got to master the dictionary. Understand? We're looking for a few men, few good men who can really discern the difference between comfortable and thriving. This is important. I don't know. This is, that was not an issue back when I was in the Army, Melody. They just get up and get out there into formation. Wasn't anything about comfortable and thriving. Dealing with conditions of ambiguity is no longer enough. Now, American soldiers must learn to thrive in conditions of chaos. It sounds like the Army is getting ready to invade Congress. Think that'll happen, Melody? There's chaos in Congress. Do you think the Army's set its sights?
You never know where they might have set their sights. Maybe they have set their sights. I think this is again, you know, it's funny. Houston. Where they had the subpoenas to the pastor's sermons, for the pastor's sermons.
Yep.
And it seems like they have backed off.
Mm-hmm. They have that one.
Yeah.
They have learned that politically correct is not simply a liberal phenomena.
Yeah, Houston Mayor Anise Parker, she backed down from the city's effort to force these pastors to turn over their speeches and papers that related to transgender rights ordinance.
Yeah, I know. They're hitting the wall on this, and it's evidence. I don't know where she comes in and what her relationship is to the transgender people. Or the lesbian, gay, blah, 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 alliance or whatever they are. But maybe they've had their 15 minutes of fame, and now they're going to have to actually learn to live with the rest of the people and not just whine and cry about how they're being discriminated against. In any case, the idea that the government or any element of the government it's going to be able to censor sermons delivered by various ministers. I mean, you got to be pretty dumb to think you're going to get away with that in this country. And at least not yet. Right. It may be another couple of years. Yeah, maybe. But at the moment, we'll still find a bunch of people who will stand up for the ministers, stand up for the sermons, the freedom of speech in the church. I mean, it was just a dumb idea by on the part of the Houston to try to censor this.
Did they really think they were going to accomplish it? But you're right, Al. It looks like they were just looking for their 15 minutes of fame.
Yeah, well, they got it. And it wasn't what they wasn't. They didn't get
it. What kind of fame they wanted?
Being stupid. Now they're 15 minutes of famous for being stupid. That's not the fame we're looking for.
Is there a large population of transgenders in Houston?
I don't know. I have no idea. You know, but a large population of idiots in the political system. I don't know how many transgenders they've got down there, but we need to do something about the sermons criticizing the morons who are in the government. That's what there's probably only 5 transgender people in Houston, but there's a bunch of morons in the government. So
we had the average 30-year mortgage rate that at a 3.97%. That tumbled this week. And actually, that's the lowest level since June of 2013. And as we've been mentioned in the beginning of the program, the dropping of the yields on the treasuries as people are seeking a safe haven temporarily and before they realize gold truly is the safe haven that they want and will need over bonds. And everybody's still waiting for the bond markets to explode, as that was the bubble that has been certainly created. But it was the 4th straight week of declines for mortgage rates.
Well, as you know, there's a interesting questions, a bunch of interesting questions. Given the history of American mortgage rates, are today's mortgages an irresistible deal? Or, no matter how low mortgage rates go, is today a bad time? In this economy, is it a bad time to go deeper into debt? What do you think, Melody? Take advantage of low rates or just avoid going into debt? What's the better advice?
I mean, if you're looking to buy a home, I mean, it's and you purchase a home that you can afford, and depending on where you are at in life, if you put off purchasing a home, I mean, people still need to live. People need to live their lives and do what is necessary and what is suitable for them. Do I think perhaps the housing prices on homes will fall? Yeah, they'll probably fall a little bit more. It's certainly not a good time to go deeper into debt. But if it makes sense for a person to buy a home now or to refinance would be the thing to do. If you're already in a home and you need to refinance, now would be the time to do that. Certainly. And it's just how you look at things. You can buy a home today. Prices might drop in homes, but you're paying a lower rate to the bank. Or you can wait in the future and wait for, housing prices to fall, but interest rates to rise. So,
yeah, there's no easy answer
there's
to
no, it. It's what's
you
suitable.
Have to be part prophet. Mm-hmm. You know, you've got to get the crystal ball out there and figure out what's going to happen in the future. The determining factor is whether we're headed into 30 years of inflation. If you're going to take out a 30-year mortgage right now, are we going into 30 years of inflation? Or are we going into 30 years of primarily deflation? If it's inflation, you pay off your debt with cheaper dollars. Mm-hmm. If it's deflation, you pay off your debt with more valuable dollars. You don't want to be going into debt if we're going into deflation. Right now, I don't anticipate 30 years of deflation.
No.
But it's not impossible that we could see a couple of years of deflation, because deflation usually corresponds to an economic depression. There's a chance we're going into an economic depression if we're not there already. If deflation becomes real, not going to be a good choice, generally speaking, to borrow money, because you will be paying off with more expensive dollars, and that means, you know, it's a good way to go broke. There'll be certain opportunities. You can borrow money and you can take advantage of certain opportunities, but if it's generally a deflationary period, it signals it's generally an economic depression, that means your job is not as secure as you might think it is today. If we went into an economic depression a year from now, well, it might be that you get cut off from your job. Now, is that circumstance going to, will you still have the ability to make the payments on your mortgage if we go into deflation, economic depression? We have a dollar becomes more valuable and you might be unemployed. You're going to probably lose your house under those circumstances, at least the probability of losing. On the other hand, if we're going into inflation, if the quantitative easing works and the Federal Reserve continues to spit out billions of dollars to inject into the economy, then it's a good idea. I generally say for the moment I'd wait. I wouldn't want to go into debt if I didn't have to. I do have to go into commercials, though. We may not have to go into debt, but we do have to go into commercials. We're Alfred Addis with Melody Cederstrom on Financial Survival. We'll be right back. Please stay tuned.
Since the beginning of the United States, kings have sought it, nations have fought for it. It has been traded, borrowed, purchased, and stolen. There is a reason for it. To secure the blessings of liberty to ourselves and our posterity, invest with the security of gold and silver. Call Discount Gold and Silver Trading at 1-800-375-4188. That's 1-800-375-4188. Listen to Financial Survival with your host, Melody Cederstrom, on American Voice Radio Network and Shortwave Radio. Visit DiscountGoldAndSilverTrading.net or call 1-800-375-4188. That's 1-800-375-4188. For the very best in gold and silver trading, call toll-free 1-800-375-4188. That's 1-800-375-4188. Call now.
Pandemics will be a part of our future. The question is, how do we protect ourselves? Are you willing to put your trust in untested vaccine, hoping it kills mutating viruses? Remember, in 1976, health officials tried to inoculate Americans with swine flu, and there was a 300% death rate for those inoculated, and millions were paid out in damages. God gave you a sophisticated immune system, and in times of need, you can make it 10 times stronger. So there's no need to panic. Just get prepared. Call Apothecary Herbs to order your upgraded pandemic kit. You will have 8 professional strength formulas offering broad-spectrum immune-boosting protection. Take a stand, have a plan, have peace, and request your pandemic kit today. Call Apothecary Herbs toll-free, 866-229-3663, or online, thepowerherbs.com. That's 866-229-3663, or thepowerherbs.com.
Hi, folks. I'm Alfred Addis here with Melody Cederstrom on Financial Survival. Got an article here from Agency France Press. The headline is China, Russia Seek International Justice. Agree currency swap line. That's the headline. Certainly a degree incomprehensible unless you maybe are looking at it. But the article says, and this is interesting to me, Russia and China on Monday pledged to ramp up efforts to promote a just world order as they signed dozens of deals ranging from energy to finance. Visiting Chinese Prime Minister Li Keqiang, if I'm even close to that, pronouncing his name properly, and his Russian counterpart Dmitry Medvedev oversaw signing of 38 agreements. Again, 38 agreements between Russia and China, including a deal to open a yuan-based, yuan-ruble swap line worth 150 billion yuan. That's 25 billion American dollars. In an apparent bid to reduce dependence on the U.S. dollar. All right, they're trying to get away from the U.S. dollar. That's one point. And it goes on and it says that the agreement allows the countries to use each other's currencies without buying them on the currency markets. All right. If there's less buying of American dollars, there's less demand for American dollars, that will tend to diminish the value of American dollars in foreign markets. But what interested me about this report is right up there in the first sentence, where it says Russia and China pledged to ramp up efforts to promote a just world order. They're working. That can't be an accident that they came up with the term just world order as compared to new world order. They're not just trying to set up an alternate banking system for the BRICS. They're also talking about setting up a just world order. This is, in its own way, reminiscent of World War II, where we had the Allies and the Axis powers. We had one group of people that were the Axis powers, Germany, Japan, I'm not sure, I don't even recall who else was in Italy, were involved in the Axis countries. We had the Allies, England, the United States, whatever remained of the free world that hadn't been overrun by the Nazis. These two sides are becoming increasingly coherent. You know, was what was a little bit of an idea, an amorphous idea. There's a certain amount of competition between Russia and some of its pals and the United States and some of its pals. Now it's firming up, and the pals are coming together, and we have a new world order versus a just world order. And we can wonder, you know, how long is this going to go? And is this a good sign, a bad sign, dangerous sign, just more news? What do you think, Melody? Does the just world order pose some sort of a threat to the new world order that might be resolved only with war? Or is this just economic sportsmanship?
Well, you know what I find fascinating here? You have China and Russia, the BRICS nations. I mean, they are doing business. And then when you look at the United States and you look at Europe, we're fighting recessions, we're fighting wars, we're doing anything but business. We have it's like our country. The United States and Europe were plagued with all these problems. So how can business be done when you have these situations? So, you know, here you have countries that are getting together. They're agreeing on things. They're making agreements. They're opening up their markets. They're taking advantage of our decline.
Well, and why are we declining? One of the reasons that we're caught up in some of the things we're caught up in is because we have become ensnared in a lot of commitments to foreign countries, in a lot of treaties. And now all of a sudden we are supposed to try to make good on things where we made the agreements when we were far more powerful relative to the rest of the world. And now we're running out of that. Maybe we can't maintain those agreements, and we're still there trying to hold things together and maintain the illusion. And we're kind of paying off our MasterCard with our Visa and using that to pay off our American Express. And we have painted ourselves into an unprofitable corner. Well, the BRICS nations are to some degree just working on their economy, in the sense of working on it, the future of their economy, rather than trying to deal with the consequences of their past economy. And that's what kind of we are right now. We're kind of dealing, how do we paper over the problems that have come up in the past, in the recent past in our economy? How can we paper them over? BRICS are saying, hey, how can we exploit our advantages?
And I think it's due to the degree of debt. We have so many internal problems. I mean, our problems from, you know, Washington to, everything. I mean, the list of problems is a list that, and they just
growing.
Continue to
it's
grow.
It's not getting any smaller. Yeah.
Not getting any smaller. And these,
we're adding problems.
We're adding.
And how many problems are we solving?
None.
How many problems have we solved over the course of the last 2 years, 3 years, 5 years? Can any of you point to a problem, a significant problem, that the government's been able to solve? About the most they've been able to do, I don't doubt, maybe there's some out there, I can't think of any, but mostly what government has done is just push these problems down the road. They've kicked the can down the road, they've managed to kind of paper over the problems and conceal them for now. But this again goes back to that metaphor I was advancing earlier in the program, the idea that an individual has a serious intestinal infection and you've got to either vomit or defecate. And the government say, no, we don't. We don't have to vomit. We don't have to defecate. We can just paste something over the mouth and wherever, and they'll look healthy. Well, you're not going to be healthy until you get the crapola out of your system. And I don't think government's going to allow the crapola to be removed, because they're going to have to admit they're responsible for the crapola. And they're not willing to take responsibility. So, again, we're looking at evidence that suggests we may be headed for a crack-up, some sort of a significant decline where everybody just says, to heck with it, I quit, I can't do anything.
The only success that the government has had in the Federal Reserve is to bring the Dow from 6,000 to 7,000.
Well, I agree.
That's the only success, and the success at what expense? Certainly the expense of every individual in this country. So, and you get these billionaires, that they've in the banks, they've certainly have benefited, from... the policies.
We'll see who benefits over the course of the next year or two. For example, let's suppose there are some people that are predicting the Dow could fall below 10,000. I'm not arguing that those predictions are valid, but
the Dow should fall a lot.
They're not completely. Well, like I say, people are making that argument. I've heard people think 6,000. All right, I'm not making that argument, but I'm saying people who are credible are making that kind of argument. They may be mistaken, but if it happens that way, people who've invested in the stock market are going to lose a lot of their assets. And that's part of the point of this. What have they done? When we talk about the only thing the government has done is boost the stock market up to 16,000, 17,000, that's been a success. But that's not a success that you can absolutely count on, where you can look at it 3 years from now, 5 years from now, and know that the economy, that the stock market has continued to rise. It may be that it falls, and all of the artificial wealth generated by the government stimulation that brought it from 6,000 to 16,000, all of that could just disappear. And if it does, there are going to be a lot of people who are going to be significantly impoverished. They're going to lose their assets because they've invested in something that was simply artificially inflated. So we were talking earlier in the program, the Wall Street, they're looking to see, will Janet Yellen continue with quantitative easing 3? Will they institute quantitative easing 4? If they will, if they expressly say we're going to continue our financial accommodative program, then, yay, we know that the stock market's going to go up. But how long can it continue to rise based on artificial stimulation? How long before we finally hit a day when somebody says, we got to revalue this down to what it's really worth, not the lie that we've been able to instigate? And when that happens, all kinds of wealth just disappears. Which, is it sensible to do quantitative easing? It's preventing that flushing that we talked about a couple of times on the program. Quantitative easing is preventing the flushing out of the bad investments, the irrational investments. It's preventing it, and the quantitative easing itself is contributing. It's prolonging the problem. Nobody wants to take our remedy. Nobody wants to take our medicine right now. Everyone is inclined to prolong the problem, but you still, realistically, you've got to look at it and say, maybe it wouldn't be such a bad idea. Let's just do it now and be done with it. Let's just buckle up and say 6 months from now, we're going to pull the plug and we're going to get all the crapola out of our economic system. All right, 6 months from today, Melody. You got 6 months to get ready, folks, and then the whole thing, we're going to pull the plug. We'll probably have 18 months, 2 years of very difficult times, and then we'll be ready to come back and see a genuine recovery and a sense of optimism, a sense of hope as we get back and we get back to work. We start manufacturing things again. We develop some sort of a work ethic, if only because we are desperate to hold a job. You know, got to go through 18, 24 months of tough times, maybe more than that. But we have to, but if Williams is right, I can't say it's God's truth, but if Williams is right, we're going to have to go through that difficult time before we get back to good times.
It's not a matter of if, it's a matter of when.
Yeah, that's. It seems almost inevitable that Williams is correct on this. It's rational. To me, it's rational. It makes sense. It's logical. It's inevitable, but when is the moment? And where will we find a Congress and a president was willing to say, all right, we're going to pull the plug. You can blame us and throw us all out of office at the next election, but we're going to do what's right for the country. When do you expect to hear that, Melody?
I have a bridge in Florida.
Yeah, right. Yeah, exactly.
That's for sale. Yeah. Uh-huh. But people can do. And the whole thing, you know, we talk about worst-case scenarios. And, you know, we talked about debt and should people go into debt. I don't think people should go into foolish debt. There shouldn't be credit card debt. There shouldn't be – you shouldn't go, you know, spending like a drunken sailor. I mean, there's responsibility when it comes to – and you spend according to what is suitable for you. So to create new debt, no, it's not good. But, you know, hey, we have to live our lives. And I do think we're going to have terrible times approaching us very, very soon. But if you have a plan, if you plan for worst-case scenario, then you – then if it happens, you're there. If you lose your job, you're not homeless.
Yeah,
you know, if so, and it's the same way when it comes to your finances. You prepare and you purchase your gold and silver today while there's product and low prices. You know, 3-5% of the population gets into gold. You think there's going to be product for you to buy then? I don't think so. So that's something we can't forget. Yes, product is flowing now, but it can disappear very, very quickly, as we saw it happen before.
They're already warning that they're down to a relatively small stockpile, the Shanghai Gold Exchange, and they're anticipating consequences when they run out of physical gold. Prices are going up, and it may be what's required. I've said before that if the people in Shanghai and China, if the Wily Orientals are selling their gold, physical gold, for paper gold prices that are still being determined in Wall Street and the American markets for paper gold, if they're selling physical gold, they're going to go broke because people are going to buy all their physical gold because they're giving it away. They have to charge a premium if they're going to stay in business for physical gold. We're out of time. We can't talk about this anymore today, but I'm sure we'll get back to some of it tomorrow. Just watch and see what the headlines lead us to talk about. I hope you'll tune in at that time. In the meantime, may the good Lord bless you, me, Melody, and Frank, the producer.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
I work all night, I work all day to pay the bills I have to pay. There never seems to be a single penny left for me.